I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Let me ask you a question. How does your favorite song make you feel? Music affects and changes people's lives. It invokes memories. The first gig you went to, the first record you bought, that song from your school days, or the song you danced to at your wedding, or even your first kiss. It gets you through the worst times and the best of times. Music has always played an important part in my life. First and foremost, I'm a music fan, but I've been lucky enough to have interviewed some of the biggest names in music, combining my career with my passion. Each week, I chat to some of my favourite artists to talk about the tracks of their lives and more. I'm Kylie Olsen, and this is Music and Me. He's a modern-day blues hero, and at the tender age of 12 was discovered by blues legend B.B. King. Since then, he's worked with pretty much every heavyweight musician, from Eric Clapton to Greg Allman. Now, one of the things that I love most about Joe is the boy sure isn't work shy. He's a complete tour dog who's always on the road getting his music out to the people who are clearly chomping at the bit to hear it. He's released 12 solo albums, and that's not including the various collaborations he's done with artists like Beth Hart and his side project with Black Country Communion. A self-confessed geek, guitar collector, and one of the greatest guitarists of our generation. I caught up with Joe Bonamassa, or Smoking Joe, as BB used to call him, to chat about his musical passions and if and when he could ever imagine himself retiring. You're going to be surprised by his answer. So, Joe, what is the one song that reminds you of home?
Well, I would say there's two, actually. Where I grew up, my mother used to play Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow. She would actually play the entire Rumors album when she cleaned the house on Saturdays, and that was required listening. And it first started playing on vinyl, and then when she got the CD, she graduated to a cassette, and then finally a CD. And that reminds me of Saturdays at home when I was a kid, is that record, Fleetwood Mac Rumors. And my father would also play records as well. But his was a little bit more, his taste was a little more eclectic. He would play Led Zeppelin. He would play, you know, Jethro Tull. He would play Dan Fogelberg, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. So, I mean, it's the type of music. It's that kind of mid-70s popular, the classics. That's what reminds me of my parents.
So the Fleetwood Mac stuff, when you heard the Lindsey Buckingham parts on guitar, did you think he was good? Was there anything you thought, oh, actually, I might like to do this? I mean, how old were you at the time?
Oh, I was probably 6 or 7. I always thought Mick Fleetwood had a great shuffle. He was a great shuffle drummer. And for many years, like a lot of children of the 70s and 80s, we were exposed to that classic Rumors era Fleetwood Mac. Little did I know there was a guy named Peter Green. Little did I know there was a song called Oh Well. And then when I first heard that, I was like, wow, you know, these guys were actually a blues band. And I started to realize where Mick got all his chops. You know, he was a blues drummer. And even that song, Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow, is one of the great rock shuffle. You know, it's like a Texas shuffle.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't realize it because it was such a big pop hit. But You know, see, blues does translate to pop music sometimes. Well, it's rare, but it does.
Yeah. No, they were a completely different band, weren't they, when Peter Green was in them? Which, I like you say, you didn't realise that, first of all, and then when you dig a little bit deeper with the band, then you realise this whole Peter Green era. And you're like, how can the two even connect? But that's it, isn't it? I suppose it's the Mick Fleetwood shuffle.
Yeah, that, and, you know, the fact that they were looking, they pretty much by the mid-70s, you know, when Peter left the band, they were kind of like looking for something or somebody to kind of give them a, let's say, a B12 shot, and they found, you know, Buckingham and, you know, Stevie Nicks, and, you know, the rest is history. I mean, it's like two different bands.
Yeah. So can you remember the first track that you bought?
First track? I remember the first album I bought. Yeah, it was, I had some money stashed away for my birthday, and my dad took me to Camelot Music in the Sangertown Mall in upstate New York, and I bought two records. I bought B.B. King Live at the Regal, and I bought Steve Morris, the introduction record, for no other reason that Steve Morris had a great-looking old Telecaster on the cover, and my father said he was a really fast guitar player. And so I listened to that, and I listened to B.B. King, and it was like two totally different albums, but that was the first album I bought. You know, they were $7.99 each. I remember that in 1984.
And what was your favorite B.B. King track off of that album?
How Blue Can You Get? It's just devastatingly good. I mean, it's a classic. That whole album is a classic, and it sounds like it was recorded with one mic, because the band gets louder when B.B. steps away from the vocal mic, and then the band gets, you know, quieter when he steps towards the vocal mic. Yeah. And again, it proves you don't need $1 million worth of recording equipment to make a great album. It's just you need a great band and a great singer.
Baby, how blue can you get?
You then went on to work with B.B. King when you were 9 or something. He became your mentor.
Yes.
When you were that age, you'd listen to him on the records. You then got to work with him. As a kid, were you starstruck, or did you just take it all in your stride?
Well, you know, B.B. King was a very intimidating guy. I mean, he was this larger-than-life persona. He was a kind, gentle soul and super nice. I met him when I was 12. I just turned 12. And he was nice enough to give me advice, a stage. He had me up on stage. You know, I mean, like, he would let me open up for him. He'd have me up on stage. And the most valuable thing I ever took from B.B. King was how he ran his business and how he ran his band. You know, they were professionals. They took the job seriously. They were thankful to be there. But they were also, you know, a really seriously good working blues band, and, you know, it was always fans first and your best foot forward, and you gave 100% or whatever percent you had, and that's really what I took from him. You know, and he'd always say, you know, you have to watch all aspects of your life. You have to make sure everything's in moderation. You have to watch your money. You have to watch, you know. And he didn't have to tell me this. He learned that, you know, 60 years on the road, you know, but he was very generous with his time and his advice, and he always was happy to share that. And a little known fact, B.B. King, and he was 80 years old at the time, showed me how to drag a song from iTunes onto an iPod. Because I couldn't do it. He was really tech savvy. He goes, no, you just gotta click, and then he showed me. He's like, watch, click, and then he dragged. And he dragged some Louis Armstrong song to his own iPod. And that's how I learned.
Can you remember what the song was?
Oh, it was he showed me on his computer. So it was some like Louis Armstrong. He was really into Louis Armstrong and a lot of the, you know, he grew up with those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, he was contemporaries with a lot of them. You know, he loved Frank Sinatra. He loved, all the classics. And, you know, his reverence for the blues, I mean, he loved, you know, Lonnie Johnson and Robert Johnson. And you're going, wow, you're an icon yourself. But he was fan first, you know, which tells you, you know, we're all fans to start with. And somehow we get roped into this business, and you can't get out.
And here you are, however many years later.
Right, you forget why you started, you know. Yeah. But that's true. Truth be told, you know, like everybody starts off as a fan, and everybody starts off in their little bedroom with a piano or a drum or something.
So, what was the track that made you go, okay, I want to play the guitar?
Eric Clapton, Further On Up the Road, from his live album. I think he put out in the mid-70s. It's the one, Eric Clapton, Just One Night. It's him with his black Stratocaster, and he's on an empty theater stage. And I think George Terry was in the band, and it was kind of like that mid-70s era Eric Clapton. And I heard him do like a really up version of Further On Up the Road, and I was like, wow, you can do that with a guitar and sing and people clap, and you can have a cool guitar like that. I'm sold. You know, it wasn't as easy as I thought, but still is. But no, but seriously, that's what made me want to play.
Now you're laughing pretty, baby. Pretty soon you're gonna be crying.
To you playing, or was it something you had to I mean, everyone has to work really hard obviously to get to where you are, but was it something that was just natural? Because I was talking about Link Wray. He apparently said that it was really hard for him to learn. It wasn't something that came naturally.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, I always said, like, and everybody has their own like situation. And you know, some people, they pick up the instrument and it's like amazing from the downbeat. Me, I always said I was 90% work ethic, 10% natural talent. It didn't come easy, but once I got my head around it and put the work into it, then it kind of started to get some traction. You know, the thing about it is every day is an adventure. Like, we're sitting here, you know, at the Hammersmith Odeon, and I'm about to play in about an hour and a half. And truth be told, until you make your first mistake of the night, and there always is one, you don't know how your night's going to go, you know? And that to me has been one of those things where that's what makes live playing so interesting. Yeah. You can always redeem yourself. If you're bad one night, you can always, well, tonight's the last show of what we're doing here. But you can always redeem yourself tomorrow. And, you know, you're only as good as your last show, and hopefully this won't be so bad tonight.
It won't be. Don't worry.
It won't be so bad, you know. Come on. Well, you would be amazed at the mental conversation that I have with myself during a gig.
Do you?
Absolutely.
Every gig you do have a mental conversation, or is it just on the Black Country Communion stuff?
No, I mean every gig. I mean there are times when you can't, like, there are times I sit up there and I go, I cannot believe I'm playing this bad, and then I'll listen back and it wasn't as bad as I thought, you know. And the nights that you think were kind of loose and weird, the fans will go, wow, that was amazing. The nights you think you're doing great and you're hitting the mark and everything is like on firing on all cylinders, people go, it's okay. And it, like, there's a lot of, every musician has a mental conversation with themselves. And it's not all look at me. Well, maybe there's maybe one member of our band that adulation is more important to.
Who's that?
I don't know. I remember, the lineup is escaping my mind this evening. There's, you know, I'm always trying to see how the crowd's enjoying it. You know, if they're into it, then you know, then
you feed off that, basically.
Yeah, you feed off of that. You know, if they're not into it, you know, doesn't mean they're not enjoying the show. They're just not lively. Then it's like, okay, then you got to work for them. You know, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on up in my mind. I hate to say it.
This is Kylie Olsen, and you're listening to Music and Me. Coming up, we're going to be continuing my conversation and find out what this is all about.
Like, I don't want to die on the road. I just, I don't want to, you know, do it to the very last. I can't get my head around that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So what's next for Backcountry Communion then? So you've just put the album out. You've done 2 dates in the UK now. Are you going to tour in America or anywhere else?
I don't know what our plans are. I mean, everybody's busy this year. I'd like to do some more shows after this experience. I mean, like we all got together and said, listen, here's after our experience 6.5 years ago or however long it was, we decided that instead of committing to 40 shows, let's try 2. And if we love each other at the end of 2, then it's a lot easier to do 2 than it is to do 40. But I think after all this now, you know, and the fact that, you know, we do have this, you know, it's a great band when it all comes together. Mm-hmm. Then I think everybody's going to collectively want to, like, you know, figure out a block of time and do something. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be 40 shows, 10. I don't know if it's going to be... I don't know if it's going to be in America or here in Europe. I mean, it just depends.
And you've got a new album with Beth Hart coming out as well, Black Coffee.
I do. It seems like we've done that record so long ago, it doesn't seem new to me anymore. We did it in August of 2016.
Oh my God. Why is it taking so long to release it?
I don't know. I really don't know. We recorded the record August of 2016. And... there was a few little bits and bobs we had to add to it, but it's coming out finally. So it doesn't feel new to me. It feels like we did this a year ago or more. Well, it should. But anyway, it's a really good record, and I think Beth really sang great on this one. I mean, she dug deep, and she did Black Coffee in the proper key, which we were talking previous to this interview. That was... my idea to do that song was to do it in the Steve Marriott key. I didn't mince words when the idea of taking the key down. Yeah, I was like, you gotta do it in G. You're the only human being that can do it in G. And she did. And she did it fantastically, you know. And that's an event. Way back yonder, where I don't know where.
See, I got hung over before I was here. Why did you choose to name the album after that song? I mean, are you a massive Humble Pie fan?
Big Humble Pie fan. I loved Steve Marriott. He's one of the best ever. And Kevin came up with the other one. We call it Black Coffee. I'm down for that.
Yeah.
And it's a cool cover of the album. It's actually derivative of an old vintage Ike and Tina Turner poster that I found.
Who is it?
And you know, because when they pitch the covers, and I'm like, no, this doesn't look good. So finally, you have to take matters in your own hands. So I just took a picture of this old poster I found in Clarksdale, Mississippi, at an old guitar shop when I was down there filming this thing about the Crossroads. And I went shopping for junk that I don't need, but I found this old Ike and Tina Turner poster, and I have it framed and it's on my wall. I just took a photo of that, and we kind of did like a little take on that. So it's cool.
Talking of the things that you like collecting, obviously some of that stuff is guitars, and you've got memorabilia from you know, signs, etc. Right. How many guitars do you own now?
I believe somewhere around 350, 360.
And the amps?
But 350, 360. I have a lot of stuff. I'm not addicted to many things. I'm addicted to Diet Coke, and unfortunately, I'm addicted to this guitar junk. And, you know, I have to figure out an exit strategy because the houses are going to, like, the house is going to get overwhelmed with this stuff. I like preserving history, and I actually like being surrounded by it, you know, and thank God I can do that. But truth be told, I'm like, what are you going to do with all this stuff? One day, so I have to figure out, maybe give it all to charity or something. Let somebody else sort it out. But I do have a list. I have pictures in a list if you'd like to see them all. It's like inventory. They call it inventory. I'm not a store.
Yeah, well, you are. I'm afraid that not many record stores or guitar shops have that many guitars, I don't think.
No, not many.
No.
Yeah, that. Well, I just get a cash register to sell them right out of the house and open up for a couple hours a day.
But do you find people come to you because they know you have this amazing collection? So it'll be like, call Joe. He'll probably have one of those. Or because I know that when I was speaking to Geddy Lee, he said that you'd pulled him into this world as well.
Yeah, well, Geddy's been getting into it. Like, he's been buying like a lot of basses and custom color stuff, and I helped him out on a Les Paul guitar, and people do come to me because they know that I do have a lot of stuff, and I've been around it my whole life. My dad was a guitar dealer, and I still have fun with it. And like anything else, if I don't have fun with it, then I'll just stop. I just have this, you know, I won't do anything out of just sheer obligation because I can't fake enthusiasm.
Yeah. So have you had any, are there any funny stories of people that you've, dealing guitars with?
I've bought guitars. I mean, my guitar ventures, I mean, I've bought guitars from little mom and pop shops. I've even purchased guitars from stage and screen actor Steven Seagal. You know, the guitar collecting thing, you'd be really surprised who's into it and who's not. You know, there are a lot of guitar collectors, you know, and musicians out there that quite frankly, you know, you wouldn't expect that are actors and businessmen and stuff like that. But, you know, going to Steven's house and buying those amps that day, that was a real trip. You know, he's a super nice guy and he's got a lot of guitars, but you know, show up at Steven Seagal's house with a truck, you know, going up, I'm gonna buy an amplifier from Steven, and like it was surreal, and that was probably one of the best guitar safaris ever. You know, we've had them where we've showed up in really bad neighborhoods and hostile environments, and shop keeps yelling at me, and it's I love that kind of thing. You know, it's a great story. We've never been kicked out of a store yet. Not yet, but
okay. That's your mission for this year, then.
Oh, I'm a tough negotiator. I grew up in a shop, and I know guitar shops have the reputation for being rude and obnoxious. Mm-hmm. And so if I get rude and obnoxious, I know I give it back. You know, But that's part of the beauty.
So you've worked with so many artists before. Is there anyone left that you would like to work with that you haven't?
I would never turn down the opportunity to play guitar with Paul Rodgers, which I have, and I would never turn down the opportunity to play guitar with Jeff Beck, which I have not, and he would be a guy on my list.
Right, okay.
Because that guy is seriously the best in the world, and I've met him, I've done shows with him, but I've never played with him, and Jeff Beck would be top of the list.
And what song would you want to play with him?
Oh, God. I'd like to get him to play Blues Deluxe, because I covered that years ago.
Yeah.
And Blues Deluxe is nothing but a couple of verses, let's just say, borrowed from a Buddy Guy song. And then it's the second verse is, I think, the second verse of Stone Crazy. And the first verse is, I think, Gambler's Blues. And it's just kind of a hodgepodge, you know, of just verses. But, you know, that Truth album really shaped my path. I mean, that's why I wanted to be a British blues guitar player. And I'd love to see him just his modern take on that song.
Yeah.
I'd even offer to sing it for him, and I'd sing it quickly so he could solo. You know, like, get me out of there. You know? I'll rush it.
Well, we like to rock and we like to roll. And the most of all, baby, we like to have a ball.
Oh my God, Neil O'Brien, once again, the best dressed man in London. What are you doing, man?
That's, I like the stripes.
Happy New Year. Good to see you, my friend.
Lovely to see you.
Have a seat. We're just finishing up the interview.
Yeah, literally, just two more questions.
Hi, I'm Kylie. Hi, nice to meet you.
I think you guys knew each other.
What? I think we met.
I think we have met, actually, yes.
Look at those shoes. Impeccably shined.
Do you like them?
The socks matching. I mean, like this.
I love
hits
it.
Hits me every time.
You've got to show respect for your artist. You've got to dress.
Well, you certainly are showing respect. Look at yours compared to that.
I mean, it's pretty drab. It's like a funeral.
Yeah. Well, that's what Johnny Cash used to say, wasn't it? So they would say, oh, you look like you're going to a funeral just before he went on. He was like, well, maybe I am.
That's what I said in Wolverhampton. Mike goes, you're dressing all in black. I go, be prepared to mourn. You know? I don't know how this show's going to turn out.
Stop it. So, can you ever imagine yourself slowing down?
Yes, I can. I have a retirement date. And I know the people that don't like me are going to rejoice when I say this, that it all ends November 8th, 2039.
Where?
It'll probably be in my hometown, if it still exists.
If it still exists, why?
Because Utica, New York, I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's been... It's
2039?
Yeah, it's being torn down. Anyway, November 8th, 2039 will be the 50th anniversary of my first professional paying gig. I'll be 62 years old, and I figure 50 years in one business, I'm done. And I'll be young enough to like sell off the guitar collection and walk away and not do it. And I'll be happy to not do it. You know, it's one of those things where I want to put my energy into other things, like is like traveling. You know, you go, wait a minute, you travel all the time. Like,
you don't see anything.
I don't see anything. Because I have to be on for the shows, I have a certain sleep schedule you have to keep, you have to take care of yourself. I don't have the time to do the touristy things or the energy. I want to actually go see the world, you know, that I've supposedly seen. You know, I want a second act, you know, I want to do something other than just guitar, you know. I mean, I think 50 years professional is enough. And I already told my manager, Roy, he's cool with it. I've let my band know. They have a 22-year notice.
But I've been booking you into 2041. I mean,
yeah.
Oh, well, that's going to cause a few problems.
Well, he did tell his agent
cancel
the last couple of gigs. But you know, 50 years in one profession is to me a very that's enough. I'm not going to be like me. I won't do it. I won't go out on the road. I won't do it. Like I don't want to die on the road. I just I don't want to. You know, do it to the very last, and I can't get my head around that. You know,
is it 50 years is a good amount, definitely. So
there's no guarantees I can last 50 years. You know what I mean? There's no guarantees that people will still come and see me 22 years from now. So I'm anxious to see if we can get to there. But there will be a 50th anniversary concert, and I'm gonna walk away.
I'll put it in the diary. I mean, even if it's in a pub with only like five people, I'll be there. Don't worry.
Okay. Well, now we have six people.
Yeah.
At least we got one pre-sale.
So not to end on a morbid one, but what song would you like played at your funeral?
I think The Sound of Silence. I think it'd be great. I like the irony. And I on my tombstone, here lies Joe Bonamassa. The bullshit has finally ended. That's it. That's how you go out, you know?
I love you. You're great. Thank you.
Thank you, Kylie. Thanks for having me.
And touch the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw.
Well, if you're a fan of music and me, then make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it, whether it be at Acast or iTunes. And I'd love for you to leave some comments, whether they're good or bad. Give me some feedback. I'm always open to suggestions. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Kylie Olsen.
Music and Me is produced by The Podcast Works and Once Some Media.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.